So it's a bit ghetto because I can't stand cable to the
and to the phone on this one.
This is number 13. Lucky 13. Last one was with Archie Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was good. I met him. I used to play football professionally years ago.
Did you really?
Yeah. So we met through mutual friends.
Yeah. So where did you play?
I went over to England 21 years ago.
Yeah.
22 years ago, actually. Didn't do year 12 and went over there and played with a bunch of clubs over there. And went to Poland, played second divvy here, over there, and then came here and discovered nightclubs and everything that comes with it. The career went, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I played through the traps here locally and then met him. And
yeah.
And I find that's how I've been meeting majority of people is through friends or through own life experiences. I have Steph Curry on here as well. That was one of the earlier ones.
Yeah, no.
He's a unit.
Yeah, really.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he's legend.
Legend.
He's seen so many great films.
Mm.
I got a mate who grew up with Archie, a mate that does stand-up that grew up with Archie.
Okay.
In Albury.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because he's deep down, country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he, as he said, he lived on the cusp of New South Wales and Victoria. And what, as a young player, what got him further into football was that Victoria had all these great players coming through. Yeah. And he figured it'd be easier to go to New South Wales and trial for their team.
Right.
So that's how it progressed. Yeah, yeah. It made him, build some confidence at 14, 15.
Oh, cool. My nephew plays in the A-League.
Okay.
Yeah, he just signed. He's with Brisbane Roar.
Yep.
He's 22, and he's just signed a three-year deal with Melbourne City.
Oh, good on him. Yeah. How old?
22. So yeah, right. 23 by the time he comes here. Yeah, we're stoked because I have another person on. Don't have much family here, so that'd be cool.
How do you cope with that with the no family?
It's not too bad. Like the first when I moved here, I was homesick. Good year, I reckon. I had one mate from home that lived here, and I thought about going home probably five or six times.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Because starting in stand up.
On your own or with
on my own.
No missus, no kid, no, nothing.
No, I just did the old school. Packed the car up. I had about $5,000 to my name. I just packed all my belongings in my car and drove to
Melbourne. How old are we?
26?
Yeah, right, okay.
26, yeah. Yeah, and then my mate was working in defence here. He was in the barracks and got me started in his apartment because he was getting he had a lovely South Bank apartment, but it was all army funded. So he's like, you come and move in for $100 a week. for 12 months. I was like, great.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. But because the stand up was so hard to get into, I could just go back to Canberra
and
keep sort of being a big fish up there. Very small. I felt very small.
Definitely. And it's funny, going through that as both being creatives is that forever droves of ups and downs.
Yeah.
And how we manage it, I think. It's at the moment commercially it's so quiet.
Yeah.
In my industry. But I've been doing this for 16 years that you kind of know how to manage it, and at the beginnings it was just it was such a fucking struggle.
So, yeah.
Back on Seek.
Yeah.
I could do that. I can lift shit. And then you really think about it, you're like, I don't want to lift shit.
It's funny, it comes in, with stand-up, you definitely have obviously COVID's shit for everyone.
But good for you? In terms of writing and ideas, or?
It's hard to write and be creative when there's nowhere to outlet to.
Can know this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
There was a few Zoom shows, and I did a weekly Zoom show where I'd get like six comedians on, and we'd do new material. So that was a part you had to do all new material. So it was just a way, and that was sort of something to write towards each week. But that was the only. Yeah, I couldn't just if I had no shows at night, I couldn't just sit there and create. You need to they need to be hand in hand.
Hand in hand. Yeah. Okay.
So it was just very. Yeah.
There was no basement shows?
No. No secret, nothing. Yeah, I wish. Yeah.
Was there anything like that? No. Had you heard of anything like that?
No.
No?
No, no little bootleg.
Yeah, bootleg little shows, that would have been.
No, I tried.
A movie in that.
I tried. I reckon there was a period there in lockdown, nothing was open, but you could have 20 people at your home.
20?
Was that? It was Victoria, lockdown.
I thought that was pretty much all of COVID, 20 people.
You'd have 20, so I did these things where I would come to your backyard. So I got speakers and microphone.
Yeah.
And it was booking out. Like in the first couple of weeks, I booked like 9 shows.
Okay.
And I was like, this is the best idea ever. Just $500, I'll come to your show, I'll do my full hour show, which, because the comedy festival got cancelled.
Yeah.
So I'll come to you and I'll do it. $500, you know, what's that, 20 people, $25 a head, that's pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And people were jumping at it. And I did 3, and they were so much fun, in people's living rooms.
Yeah, that'd be, yeah.
So. In their backyards. It was so cool. And then it got a bit worse, and Andrew's changed it to 5 people in your house.
So it's $100 a ticket.
Yeah. So I had to cancel everything. It was so, yeah. I honestly thought I could survive off this for a year, I reckon.
Mm.
But then it all got nipped in the bud, so we're back to square one. And then it took, a few Zoom, maybe I was maybe doing 3 Zoom shows a month, I reckon.
Okay.
So not, yeah, where you're normally doing 5 gigs a week in the normal. Yeah, but it was kind of all right because there was good parts. We obviously had a child at the start, right at the start.
Oh, right. Just
so, so I wouldn't have been able to see him as much as I did if there was no pandemic. And I hadn't really had, you don't have, obviously, there's no long service leave.
In what we do, no, nothing.
Yeah.
No super. Holiday.
Yeah, no. No holidays per se, but. I had gone really hard since 2010 when I moved here. I'd sort of done, 300 gigs a year.
Wow.
For that decade leading up. And maybe like a week off over Christmas where you not look at anything or do a show. But yeah, so it was kind of, there was parts of it was having a 6-month, hiatus. And I'm sure it's the same with your industry. Like you have that fear of missing out in stand-up if you're not involved in a festival, or if you're not, if other people are doing things, you're like, 100%.
I'm scrolling through Instagram, yeah. And people shooting stuff, and I'm like, oh, I could better than him.
No. Through the pandemic, everybody was not working, so you didn't feel guilty for having a little bit of time off and spending it with your family. So,
definitely.
There was definitely shit sides to it, but there was also
positives out of it that came out of it. How did you, how did you work out you had a knack for it? Or how did that all come about? And where did you, was it early days?
Yeah, so I kind of had inklings that I wanted to do stand-up from late high school, maybe year 10, 11. Mm-hmm. I loved watching the gala or things on TV and reciting the gags at school the next day just to mates to get a laugh. I hated public speaking and being up in front of a whole class,
but having
just
a laugh
with the friends.
And
I like stirring up teachers and things. I just liked that. And then I saw Jim Owen at my RSL in my hometown, Batemans Bay, when I was 17, and that show, he was supported by Bob Franklin, and I just thought it was just so funny and so, what a cool job just to be able to travel around and entertain people like that. And I planted the seed, but because I was so terrified of the speaking, I didn't do anything for 8 years.
Wow.
So when I was in Canberra, I left school and I was a chef after school, and I hated that. I did that for about 6 years for some reason.
cuisine?
Yeah. Because you just think you needed a trade, like you should get something.
Well, always, I'll go get a paper.
Yeah.
Just go do this.
Yeah.
Backup. What did you cook?
Some Italian. I worked in one Italian restaurant for a little while, but I mainly worked at a place called the Jindabyne Sport and Recreation Camp in New South Wales, which is a little town, Jindabyne, and it was for school kids, like on school camp. So it was just
pies and meat, sausage.
Yeah, Bain Marie's a slop, basically. But pretty good quality food for those sort of camps, but just no creativity, just large amounts, vats, cooking and literally stirring with a boat paddle, a literal boat paddle, stirring the stroganoff in these huge vats. Yeah, because you're cooking for 600 kids. So it was that.
I've got a story for you, though, before you continue. I've done, as a creative, you do, hundreds of jobs.
Yeah.
And I used to do all these jobs through a recruitment agency that send me out to a day or two, or 3 days. And if it's stuck, it's stuck. You'd be there for a week or 2 weeks. And anyway, I get this call up. They're like, "Oh, Phil, we've got this job for you. If you're free, it's out at Huntingdale. It's at a food factory." Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, yeah, why not? Okay, I've never done that before. I'll go check it out, you know. Maybe this will stick with me." So I went out there and they put me in the hair nets. They put me in the sock nets.
Yep.
Put a bloody apron on. Showed me the whole place, and they've walked me into this big room, and size of, you know, a good 10 by 10, with a massive pot in the middle. My job was to get up on this little ladder and stir the pot. All day.
Oh, really?
All day, and then sweep around just to keep it tidy, yeah. And then all day.
And what was in there?
Yeah, well, when I got home, I was still living with my parents, they were like, "Fuck, what smells like onion?" So I became onion boy because it was onion soup. Fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Right. Sorry to interrupt.
There you go.
Just reminded me of that.
Did you ever taste it?
No. It's stuck. But you get so used to it after 3 days, I was like, "Oh, I could do this for a while." And then parents are like, you can't keep going back there. It's in your paws.
Oh, I know the feeling. So I did that for about 4 or 5 years in Jindabyne, and I was doing like 4 a.m. starts. I was doing split shifts through winter, walking. And Jindabyne's a cold place; like it snows there. It's right next to the snowing. It's the snowing mountains.
Yeah.
And I walked to work in the snow sometimes. I lived on site, which was handy, at the camp. But yeah, doing 4 a.m. till 9 a.m. and then going back from 3 to 8, like doing split shifts. It was just a like I met some great people out of it and still lifelong friends, and it's a great experience to, I think, when you're young, to work hard. It just sort of sets you up for, you know, what the real world is like, I guess. But I didn't enjoy the kitchen. I moved to Canberra, and then there was a bit of a comedy scene in Canberra, and
can I ask, when you were working in the kitchen, was there that fire in you that you were... Were you writing at all, or was there, what you were writing?
A little bit, I had a book that I always wrote, and if I thought of a joke idea.
Mm-hmm. Did that come from some of the some of your life experience in the...
Absolutely, from people I'd met, or... and I still do that now, but it's just in my phone, just notes in my phone now.
Yeah, okay.
But I always kept a little scrapbook. But in saying that, I finally signed up to do a gig in about 2009. Start of 2009, late 2008.
Was this your first gig?
First gig,
yeah.
It was competition. And I went to the book to look at, all right, I've got to do 10 minutes. And it was so shit. Like, this, what I'd written over these 5 years, I was like, that doesn't even make sense.
Oh, really? But at the time, it made sense.
Yeah.
So I guess that's part of the development, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because even though it's shit to you then, but at the time, it was fucking funny.
Yes.
Then it helps you to where you are now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so there was some bits and pieces out of that I was able to take to stage to do my first 10, which is also weird. Normally, if you're doing your first gig, it's 4 minutes or 5 minutes.
So you've gone for 10.
And I got one big laugh on my final joke, and it, just the room, it was this pub, Irish pub in Canberra, competition called Green Faces, and the roar, like, it was so addictive. Like, it was just how my body felt. I'd never felt anything like that before.
Awesome.
When you get that huge laugh. And I walked off stage, and I knew I wasn't going to go through or in the competition because there was people who were really good on the night. But I was hooked. Like, I met a guy there afterwards who was a booker for a couple of the local clubs, and off we went, sort of thing. It was I now had this new passion all of a sudden. Everything else was just... I had a good job in defence at the time. I'd got a job in a mailroom through a mate, okay, which I think was the best job I've ever had, apart from stand up, where defence mail would come in, 2 loads a day, we'd sort it into pigeonholes and then deliver it in a trolley. That was my job. Like, just chatting to people.
Yeah.
It was the greatest. I was able to think about jokes while walking around.
Gave you that space, didn't it? Yeah.
So, then I was off then. And then Canberra had about 4 or 5 gigs at the time that were monthly. So you could do 4 gigs a month. And I probably did about 30 gigs in the first year before I moved here.
At what point did being frightened of getting up, did that sort of subside, and how long?
A while, I reckon. A while. You see some people in the scene that come from a theatre or They did
acting or
they did drama,
TV or something. Yeah.
Well, they did drama at school.
Mm.
Where it's very, the stage present is not a problem. Mm. It's more the writing of the structure of the gags. But I kind of had a bit of an idea how to write a joke. But yeah, watching old videos of me from my first few gigs, it's a hard watch. it's a lot of head scratching, a lot of like whipping the microphone cord, and like you know, a lot of nervous
kind of energy. Twitches and yeah.
I reckon it took me a good, you know, 4 or 5 years to get really comfortable on stage. And even in saying that, I don't mean like completely. I don't think you ever are completely 100%. If you can get to sort of 90-95%, I think
you're doing okay.
You're well on the way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to be a little bit ready for anything to change, or you know,
relaxed. Do you find that because of that, has that impacted your stage presence now and how you act on stage? You're quite.
Yes,
you're quite relaxed.
I think like that.
Nonchalant in a sense.
Yeah, I think there's a few things that, like where I'm from, Batemans Bay is a very laid back little sleepy beachside mm-hmm. town in New South Wales. My parents are very laid back. I have a lot of people around me growing up that were very chilled out and calm.
Okay.
For
obvious reasons? Surf town?
Yeah, a bit of that. A lot of people think that I still, you know, smoke.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I dabbled when I was like 18.
Yeah, we all did, didn't we? Yeah.
But I never. Yeah, it was never a major interest of mine.
Well, all the jokes that we made up at the time sounded great at the time.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's
sort of that. Plus, I put it down like I was a chronic migraine sufferer through my teens.
Okay.
From sort of 13 to 18, I had to keep food diaries and things. And
oh, wow.
I was getting them so chronically. And I remember my doctors or specialists would tell me just to try and relax and stay really calm. And I think that this persona I have now is also from that, because I just, if I ever got panicked or stressed about something, I would get one.
Okay.
It often come from stress or thinking negatively about something. Or I played a lot of sports, so a big match coming up, I would get one.
Ah, no good.
So I really sort of trained myself to be calm in stressful times. So mm-hmm. I think that sort of makes me now look like I don't care, or maybe I'm a bit nonchalant, but I'm just how I process it, you know?
Okay.
So I think a combination of all those things has created what I'm like on stage now. And then years of, as I said before, like the lots of gigs for a number of years in Melbourne, trying to get my foot in the door. You just figure out your style. And I reckon it takes like 7 or 8 years to figure out what
100%.
You're trying to say.
Yeah, what, yeah, yeah.
What is your...
What's your voice?
What
is your voice?
Yeah. What are you trying to... And I just sort of came...
Because you sort of become... You just kind of... Everyone always said at the beginning when I started, a lot of older people, oh, you got to find your style. Oh, you got to, you don't have a style.
Yes, right.
And I'm like, well, I don't have a fucking style because I've only been doing it for 4 or 5 years or whatever it was. And so you become a generalist.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I've got a style.
Yeah.
Now you kind of fall into something because you're good at that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go, you know, try to shoot a bloody documentary if I don't know how to do it.
You're right.
You know, so it's I think there's so much truth behind that.
Yeah. And yeah, like I know now that I'm not a political comedian. I'm not a,
That's not your voice.
Yeah, I don't have any interest in that, so I wouldn't try and force that onto stage, you know. So I've just figured out that I just like to talk about what I think is funny.
Yeah.
And it's just pretty much everyday life things.
Yeah.
I like to get a little bit dark.
Yes.
And sneak up on people with things that are maybe catch them off guard, a little bit darker or...
You pop up on my Instagram quite often.
Yeah,
your little reels and all that.
Yeah, I think you can get away a little bit with things if you're a little bit cheeky. I like to be subtle and a few little gut punches here and there, you know. But that's just come with time. And
Where do you find you draw that inspiration? Where is there someone that you, or are there a few people, characters in your life that inspire you to write a joke about them without them knowing? is there people just from everyday life that you see?
They're all different.
You'll see something.
And things that I'm passionate about, I guess. I don't like to give. How do you say it? Like I would never talk about who I vote for. on stage or what my
personal
I don't like to do that. I don't want people to come and have to worry about what's in the news or
I get your point.
I like you to come in and you just forget
about it. We're seeking, just
come in for an hour and
let's put the blinkers on and just think
and just listen to the stupid shit I've got to say for an hour. So I guess there's definitely characters like my father is definitely he was often in my shows over the years, things he'd said or things he'd done. And but I've never had this joke about every time I went home to see him, he was always on the roof. Like every time I got, he's just on the roof. What is it with dads? Just he's always on the roof.
Always like waving at you?
Yeah, with the gutters or something with the gutters. Tiles. The aerial, the tiles. I'm like, just get off the roof, mate. Come down and talk to me. Like, I always have a sore neck when I go home because I'm always looking up.
That was his way of getting away from you when you get home. He's looking, Daniel's coming home, get on the ladder. Oh, give me the ladder.
He'd always feature. And then now it's just like more things I see or people I meet. I've got a joke in this new show about this interaction I had with a kid at Foot Locker in a store, like, and just this back and forth we had. And it's almost like fully to the T what happened. It's like, which is very handy for a show. So yeah, you're just kind of always looking out for stupid shit and stupid shit people say.
Which is a lot of it.
A lot.
There's a lot of
Put it in my phone. Silly stories I see just in day-to-day life.
So would you say who inspired you most as a comedian?
Well, definitely Jim Owen. Jim Owen, the first show I saw.
Yeah.
And his Jim Owen show was on TV at the time here in Australia. It was very popular. So people like that. My parents watched a lot of Billy Connolly.
Okay.
When I was a kid. Yep. So we had like the pick of Billy Connolly's album in our house. And it was that famous photo where he's got his finger up his nose, just his full head on the thing with his finger in his nose. And I listened to that when I was a kid. So I reckon the way I write a joke is a little bit of a throwback to that era.
It's very story.
It's a lot of like sort of set up punchline. But I try to originally I was very set up punchline, like a long, maybe a minute and a half of talking and a punchline. Where over time you realise you need more.
You need
tags.
To get
people laughing the whole time with a big
and engage. And that brings them in, doesn't it? Yeah.
So I guess originally I wrote like that and then I've sort of developed my own little thing. So those two, I think, would be definitely up there. And then just like when I moved to Melbourne, I would just see like I've met so many kind of legends of the Australian scene. A lot of people who the general public might not know. People like Des Dowling, Brad Oakes, Dave O'Neill. People know Dave O'Neill fairly well. Bev Killick,
photographed her. She's a funny woman.
She's
wild.
Like, just those people, like you just meet them around the scene, you have chats with them after a show and you just get like some great advice. And they're kind of, in a way, they definitely spur you on to, and because they give you advice on what to do and maybe what not to do or how to go about things. So I guess that is inspirational in a way. Without them realising, you're probably...
They're mentoring somewhat.
They probably just think they're having a drink with you, but what they're saying to someone that's quite young and new in the scene is quite influential. I've definitely taken bits of info from all of these people in those early days of things like, stick to your time is such a valuable thing in stand-up. And I don't think it's taught enough to people starting out. Like, people don't realise if you got 15 and you do 20, that booker won't probably book you again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just little things like that. Okay. You really got to stick to time. Like when you look at little things, like when you look at it.
What can I ask? Sorry, can I ask why? Why is it so important to stick to 15? And if you do 20 and you're still getting laughs, is it throwing off the next person that's coming up? Bit of respect for.
Yeah, if it's just your show and you on your own, go for it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but clubs are always, there's always five or six on the lineup. So you kind of, if it's a 2-hour show, you don't want the headliner to be on when everyone's tired. So it's just kind of respectful, keep to time. And if you get 5 minutes, do 5 minutes. 5:30 is fine, but once you start getting up around 10, it's taken the piss a bit. And it still happens.
Does it really?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, no shit.
The message hasn't really got through. Lots of little things like just to, that sort of work ethic and everything, like just knuckle down. Like someone like, say, Dave O'Neill, for example, that he's pretty well known in Australia.
Mm.
But he works, like he's, in my time in Melbourne, he works so hard. Like he's just always gigging. Like I'll do a gig with him, like a corporate gig. We did one, we went out to a place called Paradise, which is like out.
Like Centris?
The other side, like out where the fires were recently, towards the Grampians.
Yeah, that way.
And
Paradise.
Paradise, yeah. Yeah, just a little, just like a town hall, not much out there.
Was it like Paradise? Yeah, was there a palm tree?
I love that part of Victoria. Like,
I love that country,
so it was pretty cool. But we drove out there, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, this is my third gig today." He'd already done two around lunchtime. He'd done like a, he's just always gigging it. He sells himself as sort of like Australia's best known, cheapest comedian.
Yeah, okay.
So he just gets, he's still making bank, absolute bank. But someone like that, I think, is a good example for, I think, younger comics on the
scene. Yeah. Would someone like that, would he change? So he's doing three gigs a day, let's say, on that day.
Yeah.
Would he have changed? How versatile do you have to be in that? It's with your jokes and your crowd, and obviously he's not going to walk in there with jokes that he's doing for a different venue to.
He'd have obviously a lot to go off, a lot of things in his back catalogue to go off. But he'd definitely look at walk in. You look at the age. You look at the demographic. Yeah, absolutely, and just change on the run. It's often a half hour spot at a corporate event, so you kind of maybe a bit of crowd work. He's very good at that.
Okay,
talking to people and putting shit on people. I think you just gotta, and early days you can't do that. Like you go to a thing and you've got 20 minutes at a corporate event, it's your 20 minutes. This is my best 20 minutes. I can't change gears here.
Yeah, okay.
You know, back 5-6 years ago, I didn't know how to do crowd work but now you can, as the years go on, you can go to an event and walk in and say, okay, I've got to do this bit, I won't do that bit, I'll talk to this person. So yeah, that all comes with time as well.
Has crowd work has that become more prevalent lately? I feel like it has.
So yeah, I think a lot of people a lot of comics are filming crowd work now.
Yeah. Paul Smith keeps coming up.
Yeah.
The guy in the Scouser from Liverpool.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's ruthless.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you film crowd work is often off the cuff and it's. Only going to happen that one night with that one person. So people are filming it knowing they're not burning material. So you'll see a lot of crowd work on social media because it's a one-off and they don't need to worry about it because they're not going to do that again.
Yeah, that's right.
But if they put up one of their best bits, they've burned that bit.
That's a good way of executing their name out there.
So I think absolutely it's more, you see it more. I used to go to a gig and it would just be the MC that would talk to people, the host of the night, who's still a stand-up. But he's hosting and chatting to the crowd, then people would come up, do their spots, and just do their material. But it's definitely a thing now where.
In the world of social media.
Yeah, where more people are chatting. I haven't put too much crowd work up, but if I put stuff online, it's often the previous. I would put nothing from this year's show up until I finish my tour at the end.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm always one year
season behind, in a sense.
Yeah. And even then, I'd probably keep. I reckon if I did a corporate gig and I did my best half an hour, I reckon only about 10 minutes of that is online. Trying to hold a little bit back so it's a bit fresh.
Right. So you came to Melbourne, hanging out with Dave and Bev and the scene here. And how old were you? So you're living in $100 a week apartment in South Bank.
Yeah. I was about 27, I reckon. 27.
Single.
Yeah.
Living on what level?
I was on the 25th floor.
Fuck, so you got a view.
It was great, but I'm scared of heights. So.
Yeah, I noticed that.
What are we?
The first thing I noticed, you were taking a photo and you're like, I was about to say, get closer.
Yeah, I was like,
and it's balconies here, so you're right.
I'm always a meter back.
So was all the furniture made back in the apartment?
My mate used to put my shoes out on the balcony, right on the other side, and I'd have to get a broom and like lay on my stomach and drag them.
Yeah, 100%.
What an asshole. Yeah, and drag my shoes back across. Yeah, I don't know what, I just can't, yeah, can't get into it. But in a plane, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's fucking weird, isn't it? In a window, and you're 30,000 feet.
Yeah, I had to do a gig. I did a gig up at Eureka Tower.
Yeah,
on the, what is that, the 88 or something?
And yeah, one of them.
I didn't go anywhere near the edge. And the toilets in there.
You were crawling out of the elevator. Yeah. So where am I going to do the show?
Too much. Yeah, laying flat.
I'm just here, guys.
Yeah. So yeah, I was here for a good. I did all the clubs, just working my way up and trying to, find out what if this was worth it. I was working in, I got jobs in call centers and
the old call centers. I
got a contract in defense and I worked at Vic Barracks doing the mail.
Yep.
When I first moved, but that ran out and they moved me on. And I got a job just call centers and insurance, Suncorp insurance. And
did you ever get fired from anything or?
I left a couple of things that just I kind of needed 20 to 30 hours a week just to survive and then be able to do that on the side. So I did,
characters in call centers.
Yeah. I don't think I ever got fired, but I still met some friends that still come to my shows now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, some really cool people. And I reckon it was 20, it took me probably till 2018, 19 till I quit all my jobs.
Okay.
And I worked at the project for a bit, just writing behind the scenes.
Yep.
And then
that's a good in.
That was good.
How did that come about?
Just friend of a friend was the boss, and I went for a trial, and they knew who I was just from my stand up.
Okay.
So that was around 2016, 2017.
Okay, so that would have been awesome.
It was
for
such
you.
A eye opener how TV works, and just to be able to write, use my skills for someone else's. I'd never done that before. It was really cool. And I reckon that helped my own writing because it's really shorthand. It's really one line for say someone like Peter Elliott who was then to say off the back of a video. It's one sentence. So you're just basically writing really sharp, quick. And the only downside is it's PG, obviously, and it's for TV, so you can't really translate any of it.
Fucking PG.
Yeah.
But you're sitting next to the missus going, I wrote that one.
Yeah. Some nights you'd get four or five on there, which was cool. But then that kind of wore off and
straight
whiteboard and there's another one. That sort of wore off.
Yeah, we'll wait for you. While we're doing that, I'll just check if we're recording. Just making sure. Half an hour in.
Yeah, it was a really, really cool job. And it's kind of like you're working in that industry, you're getting paid in that to do, it's comedy.
To do what you love.
Yeah, the only downside was they were huge days and you wouldn't feel like I could happily go to a gig afterwards, but it was kind of stunting my own writing for myself. If I was in there 3 or 4 days a week, just couldn't write for myself.
How did that work? How would the writing work? Was it a bunch of you together?
Yes, okay. Yeah, so it's a writer's room.
Bouncing.
Yeah, not so much for the ideas. A lot of producers would come in looking for ideas, and that's when you're bouncing to help them.
Okay.
But for the gags that you needed in by 5 o'clock for the show hosts, that they would, you knew what the 5 topics were that they wanted jokes for.
Okay.
And then you just get to work and kind of submit, 5 to 10 for each topic, and they'd use them. And they'd just get all the sheets printed out, and they'd use them if they wished, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I did that for a few years. And I got a spot on the gala, the Comedy Festival Gala in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably wasn't ready for it from a full performer point of view, but I was going really well in shorter spots, and I think they saw me at the club.
Okay.
And my full
show. How long was the gala?
Just 4 minutes. So okay. I just did my 2 best jokes from the show that year, and it went great. I was never been so terrified in my life.
How many people was that in front of?
3,000.
Yeah. And you've done only 30 or 300.
Yeah. So it was, and then also boom cameras flying down in front of
me. True. And who was hosting it that year?
That was Will Anderson. Host. So that was an awesome experience, but deep down I knew I wasn't quite ready for it. And my show that year, which I got good numbers because of the television spot, the show wasn't as good as the spot was.
Okay.
But out of that, I got a lot more work, which was great. So I got another one in 2019, And then after that, I was kind of able to quit working and just fully, because the majority of money I was making was now off stand-up, so I needed to put all my time into be able to write
Of
a
course.
new show each year. So I was really starting to cook along when pandemic happened. I went to Edinburgh 2018, 2019.
Cool. How's
Just
that?
unbelievable. Yeah,
What a
unbelievable.
city.
Yeah, amazing city, amazing festival, just the biggest, just the whole city is
And they're
alive.
funny people.
Funny
The
people.
Brits are funny.
Yeah, and they really, they
British
keep,
Scots.
they get around you, like they like the show, they tell their friends, and you can really grow into the next year. They'll all
Okay.
come back again. So I felt a real growing, like something happening over there, but then it
It's
was,
bubbling. It's all
yeah.
bubbling up.
And we all planned to go back in 2020 with our newborn, but it all obviously it didn't happen then for 2 more years. The COVID sort of just stopped everything. I was sort of starting to get some early momentum, but obviously, how I said before, everybody was not working, so I didn't feel like I was missing out, not working. The whole world had stopped basically, so just sort of chilled out for that bit. But I knew coming back, so I think we sort of started gigging again at the end of 2020, and I just really wanted to hit the ground running. And then the 2021 festival happened, and they couldn't let, there was no internationals coming in,
Yeah,
so it was a
okay.
real chance for the Aussie acts to capitalize. And I had my show ready because I didn't wasn't able to do it the year before. Made a few tweaks and then got another gala spot 2021, and then had a great festival. Yeah, sort of. And then the last couple of years have been, you know, rolling on since then. And I just did the gala this year, last week, last Wednesday night. So I've done 4 of those now, and one of the all-star ones. So it's, yeah, it's been, and now I feel like I'm. My shows can match what you see in that 4 minutes,
Yeah, okay.
which is a nice
And how
feeling.
long's the show?
55 minutes.
55, okay.
Yeah. So,
Do you remember the first time you ever bombed? Yeah. It still happens every so often, or not as
look,
much
it
as.
doesn't. It. You definitely have gigs that are not amazing. It's hard to like really just bomb. You have to be saying some real crook shit to like properly. If you ever see like a proper bomb where you can hear a pin drop
Yeah.
and like a few groans even, it's someone saying some real crook stuff.
Yeah,
Like,
okay. They're not, yeah, okay.
Or it's
Yeah, that's a good
hard.
point.
Yeah, because often you can, if it's not going well, you can just say something or talk to someone and it just sort of breaks a bit of the tension. But sometimes you'll get a festival show. Like in Melbourne, you do 22 shows for the month. You'll be 10 in, and the show will just be cooking. You're just having the best time. And you come up to a Saturday, and you've got this sellout Saturday night. You're like, how good's this going to be? And they're just like really quiet,
Different, a
and
different kind of
they're just sort of
crowd.
nodding their head and smiling all at once. It's bizarre. And then you'll talk to all your mates that night. They just had a weird crowd tonight. They just weren't like hot. And everyone's like, yeah, I had the same. I had the same. My crowd were just
Yeah,
smiling. And like, it's
okay.
just always something in the universe that will just sneak up on you. Comedy's the best thing to just to put you back on your
Full
game.
moon?
Maybe 4 moon. I've never
Maybe.
looked outside. I will check that next time. Yeah, but there's no better thing to bring you back to earth. You think you're the best ever. You think you're flying, and then you'll just get yeah. It's great. It always just yeah, levels
Levels
you
you out,
out.
doesn't
Yeah,
it? Yeah.
which I like. Yeah, I like to be put in my place. Yeah.
Did you ever get up on stage at so you never did anything at high school or nothing in primary school, never got up.
I did.
Because that's where we all bombed as kids.
my parents had me in a Catholic school when I was like a primary age kid, but it was only because my auntie worked at the school and got sweet fees,
Okay.
got a discount. Mum and dad sent us all there, and I had a
Did
high
you
pitch.
ride a did you ride your mongoose or your Molten Star?
I was. Yeah, I think I had a mongoose. I had a blue mongoose from memory.
Did you with the pegs?
Yeah.
Fucking ain't
I got a
fancy.
Christmas. Yeah.
How old are
I reckon like we used to ride to school about 8 or 9. Yeah.
Yeah.
Long way. If you saw how far it was, it's pretty funny how far we used to ride to school on a BMX.
What?
On the hills,
You're like,
like.
Ma, give us a fucking race. Isle
Yeah.
Hills, mountain, you needed a mountain bike.
Yeah. And I used to sing because I had a high pitch singing voice. They used to put me in the. I used to sing in the choir, and I
Choir.
was the one that would have to like. And I have memories kind of it, but I don't remember being scared. But I would like have to sing on my own certain parts. Me and this other girl called Laura.
No wonder you're fucking terrified.
Yeah. And then obviously my voice broke and I can't sing for shit now. Like, my voice is terrible. If I try and sing, my wife just laughs.
She puts the fucking shoes out on the balcony.
Yeah, I can't sing. So that was the first sort of on stage. And then, yeah, I used to do the cricket rap for our year 11, 12 cricket.
Yeah, right.
Not like a song rap, just a rap.
Yeah, 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 of the season. Yeah, yeah.
A fortnightly.
How'd a rap go, though? Come dry. Yeah, yeah.
And that was terrifying. Having to get up at assembly and just tell the scores from our team.
Shut up! They get you to do that at assembly.
We do that assembly. Yeah, we do.
Would you chuck anything? Like, would you?
Nothing.
Nothing. You would have made
the quickest.
You were like on and off.
Yeah, and my hands would be shaking at the legs the whole time. So that's yeah. I didn't do any
dodging apples.
Yeah, yeah. You know that first gig I was telling you about?
Yeah.
That competition, I had to take a mic out of the stand, and I looked at it, and I hadn't cracked. I realized I'd never taken a microphone out of a stand. And I got to it and I like had to fiddle with it, right? So I didn't know how to do it. So yeah, I had no experience whatsoever. And I reckon that's why it took
Mike Virgin.
A long time. Yeah. 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 I was a big Mike Virgin. Yeah.
Singing. I rang the bells. I went to Catholic primary school as well. And
like rang the bells as they were bells. Walking down the
aisle. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the bell.
And then you try to nudge the other kid out of the way. It's like, don't give me a turn.
Yeah.
in the get up.
Yeah, I have distinct memories. Did you do this where? Because they'd clap at certain points in the at church.
What church was this?
It's Catholic. Like someone would like to be a clap. I think it was like present. They do like presentations.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'd always try and be the last one to clap.
Or the longest. Yeah.
Oh, and like, the last clap would happen and it would be dead silent in the room and the teachers would be like staring at us and the priest would get up, we're going to talk, they need to hear this, man. Yeah. Oh, we got detention a lot for that. That was the highlight of my primary school.
We had, and it's funny how, people rub off on you and there was a few teachers that growing up I had, and priests who at church would make it interesting.
Yeah.
Tell you fun stories or interesting story. Yeah. As well as, there was this bloke we had in our high school, Mr. Jacobs, and he was from South Africa.
Yeah.
And if you didn't want to do any work, you get him to talk about the South African, the government, him growing up, and
yeah,
the third time I reckon he'd be like, not today, boys. Heads down into the textbooks and get some work done. Tell you another story about South Africa one day. He cottoned on. We were trying to take the piss.
Yeah, I don't have many. I had one teacher that used to trade footy cards with us.
Oh, really?
He was the best. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He was like
what was his name?
Good question. I know it, Mr.
Good start.
Him and his wife both worked at the school. Oh.
Of course they did. Imagine there. Imagine getting home, that couple coming home.
Yeah.
And talking about, they just talk about students.
Yeah.
And what they got up to. Fuck.
And he used to try and rip you, like he used to do dodgy deals with his trading cards.
Yeah, did he really?
Try and like get you two for one.
See, that's why he started to work at a school, because he was so into the trading cards.
And he drove a car with a big like snake printed on the bonnet.
Snake.
Yeah, he was proper like the comic book guy.
Yeah,
he sort of looked like him as well from Simpsons. Yeah.
What kind of car? Like a bloody Sandman or something?
Yeah, no,
like a panel van?
No, it was like more like one of those old American hotted up.
Yeah, right.
Like a black car with a snake on the thing. He was proper like...
Mullet?
Long hair. Yeah, honestly, he looked a lot like the comic book guy. Well, I can't remember his name. I can't. I'm sorry. Till if he's listening.
I had a Shaquille O'Neal rookie card, and I used to have this game that I play with a kid from around the corner. He was much older than me. And he'd come around, and we'd play penalty shootout.
Yeah.
I was a goalkeeper growing up, and I was still a goalkeeper when I played, when I swam, whenever I get a chance to. So I had a Christmas tree and a tap, outside tap, and that was the goal.
Yeah.
And we played penalty shootout in between that.
Yeah.
And we'd always put down like four or five cards, you know, up for grabs, and whoever lost grabbed it.
Yeah.
And he conned me into putting down a Shaquille O'Neal rookie card.
Oh, no.
We have a fortune now.
Yeah.
My parents fucking cracked it. They were like, you could have get that back.
Oh, so it was gone.
He won the penalty shootout, but he won, like, he was older and he wasn't taking the piss when he was shooting for this.
Yeah.
Fucking balls flying. Yeah, I was grabbing the ball, I was flying back into the neighbor's joint. And
so never saw it again.
And him either, because dad told him fucking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, old bog parents.
What's it worth now, you know?
I don't know.
God.
Yeah. So my trading card days ended quite abruptly after that. Stopped getting the cards.
Yeah.
I still found a couple of them, though.
Yeah.
A few of the albums.
Yeah.
Got a few sets finished. The Upper Decks and Fleur.
So mainly, did you do
basketball?
Basketball, yeah.
93, 94.
Yeah. That was huge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I did rugby league cards.
It's so huge.
I was pretty big in New South Wales.
Never made it down here.
But I have an Andrew Johns at mum and dad's house. An Andrew Johns Australian. It was like one in, I want to say, 80,000 or something.
Wow, cool.
It's in like a Perspex.
Yeah, with the little screws.
My pride and joy. I want to try and meet him one day and get it signed.
I met him in Sydney, out on a night somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I pestered him. Or rinsed. And I think I was doing that Meninga off to Kamuli. He's like, fuck off, you idiot.
He hated it.
Oh, he was a big, funny dude. They had that show with Fatty and
Footy
Show.
Yes.
Their Footy Show followed up the other Footy Show, the Aussie Rules one. And I'd much prefer to watch Fatty and Sterlo. They were a funny bunch.
Bunch
of guys.
Huge. We used to rate like 2 million.
Wow. Before the actual Eddie Maguire Footy Show as well. Because they were around before that.
Yes. Yeah. It was huge. It was absolutely massive.
That was fucking funny. As much as I didn't enjoy rugby.
Nothing else like that. Yeah. That was a good app. A lot of comedians really made their name on that.
Oh, really?
Carl Barron, his whole thing launched from that.
Did it really? Okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
So, because there were so many people watching it, he was a regular on there. And
he was a fucking funny dude.
Yes, and now he just tours like once every 4 years.
Mm.
Takes his time to write a show, gets it where he wants, and then they don't even do any advertising. They just announce the shows. And last year...
He was at the Palais, was he?
He did 11 Palais.
11.
11.
And what does that?
3,000. 11. I think he came back and did a couple more because they couldn't. Yeah.
They couldn't fit everyone in.
Like all the. I think he did the State Theatre or something. Like 10 of those in Sydney. Yeah.
Wow.
That's like he's flying. Absolutely making bank. Living the dream.
Good on him. He's a funny dude. I saw him at the Palais years ago. Mm. Yeah, he's very funny.
He's definitely like.
He's up there.
Yeah.
He's very emotive, you know, and he's all the sound effects.
Yeah,
he's quite. Yeah, he's good.
He's another, like watching him on the Footy Show when I was a teenager. That's another person.
And that.
Yeah.
That elevated him, didn't it?
Oh, huge. Yeah.
I remember seeing Stephen K. Amos.
Oh yeah.
Fuck, he was funny.
Yeah.
Very
funny. He's out here. Actually, he's just gone into the Chumble on that celebrity show.
Has he? What's he doing up there?
Yeah. I saw him in Adelaide Fringe a few weeks ago.
Okay.
So he must be still going to tour, I guess, but he's gone into the I'm a Celeb.
Mm. So with the rugby cards, okay. So what do you reckon that's worth now?
Well, I haven't looked it up, but with the signature on it, it'd have to be pretty...
Hefty.
Good, yeah. But I'll just hang on to
it. You get him to sign it.
Yeah. Pass it on. Yeah. Just feeling if it was like $14. Yeah, he sometimes look online.
Or he goes to sign it and something fucking edges the corner or something.
I have done that before. I've looked at... Remember my dad, he got this Coca-Cola surfboard, which I think like it's a proper Coke official surfboard. And I was like, that's got to be worth, like, collectors, people love Coca-Cola
Yeah.
collections. And we're like, and I Googled it and it was like $180. I was
But
like,
yeah, you had an idea that it was worth thousands.
Yeah, I thought that's got to be worth like 25 grand.
Underwhelming.
So, yeah. It sucks, but yeah, I don't know.
What did you collect when you were a kid, other than the cards?
I liked I had a lot of G.I. Joe, like, army figurines.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I used to love
He-Man?
the one. He-Man. Oh, He-Man was huge.
Yeah,
we must have been very similar age. He-Man was...
Old.
He-Man and She-Ra. He was so big. But I had these army men. I had them for years.
The little green ones?
Yeah, and with the parachutes.
Yeah, the parachutes
off
and
the
balcony.
Yeah. Those, I was just...
Off the balcony.
Off the balcony. And we had a huge balcony, big driveway down, and they would just fly.
Was that balcony something to do with you being scared of heights? Because you weren't scared then.
Oh, maybe. It wasn't... No, it wasn't this sort of...
Although, parachute maximum going.
One of those parachute dudes off here would be awesome. Down at Chapel Street. I'm not sure where the height thing come from, to be honest. I don't know. My sisters pushed me off a retaining wall when I was a kid, and I smacked my head and had to go to hospital. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
You pushed her back?
No. I was on a little... They're older sisters, and I was on a little trike, and they convinced me to ride along the edge of this retaining wall. And the back little wheel just fell off, and then I just went with it.
Do you have a helmet?
No. I was like three.
We were built
like
different back then.
Yeah, it was 3 meters down under concrete. Yeah.
And you just bounced back up.
Yeah. I remember early childhood memory with like wet cloths on my head in the hospital. Like, yeah, getting looked at. There you go.
Explains a lot.
Yeah.
No, those green men, fucking, they were part of my childhood as well. And I remember Dad would, I was a pretty fucking loose unit growing up, and I'd get into trouble and Dad would make me rake all the leaves up,
yeah,
and then not put it in the green bin. He'd make me dig a hole because we had clay in the backyard,
yeah,
which was a cunt
yeah.
to dig,
yeah,
to put the leaves in there, because he said, oh, Dad, break up the clay.
Yeah, right.
That was his way of punishing me.
Wow.
But during these digs, when I was older, I'd find these green little men everywhere in the garden. That I'd either lost or wouldn't have played, or, you know, there was a massive explosion and one of the wars that I had going on.
Yeah.
And the green men were fucking scattered.
Yeah, didn't find any actual bodies of anyone.
No. Too much clay.
The bodies, they break up the
clay. Yeah. Preserved in there.
Yeah, I remember clay trying to, It is cool to feel and play with, but it's not fun.
To dig.
No,
he
had it figured out.
He had it figured out how to punish me.
We would have to, our punishment was like dusting the house. My mum had to dust it.
With the feather?
Had to dust everything. Yeah, just sneezing, listening to, I don't know, Boz Scaggs or something. Mum's music.
Yeah. On vinyl?
It's a CD.
CD.
Boz Scaggs, Billy Joel. Yeah, Saturday morning, dust the house, you're in trouble.
Yeah. What would entail you getting in trouble? Like, what would you have to do to push them off the edge?
It was always something to do with siblings, but I did get in trouble at school a little bit, which would translate over into punishments at home. Do you know what? I saw my wife the other day. I got the cane.
You must be a little bit older than me, because I just missed it.
I'm 40.
I'm 42. Yeah. I'm 42, not 42, I'm 40.
Yeah. I was about 8, and we were breaking rulers, the plastic, remember the colour plastic rulers?
Yeah. Where you put them on the side and you go ding.
Yeah. We were breaking them and on the concrete making surfboards, out of them. And
ingenious.
We still had a...
Kids, man.
We had a sister, like, she was the principal, but she was a nun.
Yeah.
And she took us into it. I got the full cane, hold my hand out.
Yeah,
one
right.
Over the knuckles, and then turn the hand over and one on the hand. Both hands.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I think about it, I thought, that is actually, I reckon it would have been, I think because it was a small country town, they were still, I it's getting away with it.
Yeah.
So I feel like in the cities of Quebec,
it wasn't. There wasn't. Right yeah, no. It, it, yeah. We weren't doing it here.
Yeah.
Mazenod, the high school I went to, Catholic boys' school, we missed it by about. Because I remember the teacher said to me in year seven when I got there, probably like the second day, he's turned around.
Yeah.
You're bloody lucky. Because I would have had a few day with you, mate.
God, they must have hated it. The ones that love giving it to kids, then having to stop, and then a shithead kid coming across.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been.
Especially that generation, the 90s kids. We were wild. Wild units.
See, I'd get my hand smashed by her, and then I'd have to dust on Saturday as a result because I got the cane. And my hands are aching trying to hold the little feather duster.
What colour was the feathers?
Yellow. Yellow. Always yellow feather dusters. They must have just had a bargain at
the $2 shop.
Yeah. It's called Golo. Yeah. Did you ever have those Golos?
Oh, yes, we did. Yeah. Fuck.
Big.
Golos and Tucker Bag. Yeah, Tucker Bag.
Love the Tucker Bag.
Yeah. Tucker Bag.
Yeah. What happened? It's a shame Tucker Bag didn't.
I know, they would have made them nowadays without the plastic.
Yeah. Ahead of his time.
Sustainable.
Yeah. I wonder if Tucker Bay turn into IGA. I feel like there's something.
Or Richie's.
Yeah, right. Some sort of connection
with the community band.
Yeah.
I always remember Jingles.
I wonder where he is. Tucker Bay now. Pretty retired.
Sitting on his millions of Tucker Bags. I think I worked at a Tucker Bag.
Yeah.
I think so. In fact, there were some jokes going back there in the day when about Tucker Bags. I'm not going to repeat them. probably cancel worthy nowadays. But the 90s were a wild time.
Yeah.
They really were. No, we didn't get the cane. And the cane, I don't know, I couldn't imagine. Back then, there would have been no schoolwork done at my high school.
Yeah.
Caning, everyone just. Yeah. What did you get? So you said that you got into a lot of trouble.
I was a little bit cheeky, I guess. But
what was that one thing that you did that you kind of probably shouldn't mention, but you did it and you're like fucking got suspended for it. Did you get suspended?
I did. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So you did some hefty shit.
I did a couple of things. It's funny when you look back and you're like, why did I do that? And I was with mates that were a little bit naughtier than I was, still I don't think that's any excuse. I was pretty dad was pretty staunch with us on not to mess around and things, and
which makes you more kind of
he's a pretty intimidating guy when he gets angry, I wasn't scared of him or anything, but you know, he had me in line. Like, I really respected his authority on that. But I still did a couple of things. Like, I remember I got in a lot of trouble. I was prank calling kids in my year. I was year seven or something. Prank calling kids. Just saying stupid shit. And one kid told his parents, obviously, and they got the police involved. I had to go to the police station. And I remember just going out to dad. He was watering the back grass. And I just had to go up and go, can you take me to the police station? He's like, what for? I was like, oh, Quentin's complained of being prank calling. He's like,
always a Quentin, wasn't it?
Yeah, I said, he's like, did you do it? And I was like, yeah. He's like, we're sucked in. Let's go. Go and cop your medicine. Like, he was just like,
You fucked up, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another time he didn't get caught, but I was about 17. And I put this in a show a few years ago, but me and a couple of mates were driving to a party. We were with a girl and we found this guy. He'd crashed his car down this embankment.
Car park there, mate.
Yeah. So we didn't hurt him. He wasn't hurt. We didn't know him, sorry. And we helped him get his car out. So we sat on the boot and my friend, the female friend and the male mate, sat on the boot and he took off with them on the boot. He got out, but he just didn't look back and just gunned it. And they had to jump off and she's just snapped her arm.
Oh.
Probably halfway up your arm, just fully just flopping, screaming. And we were going to a party just down the road, a surf club, and she's like, my sister's there, just take me to my sister. So we did, and we're furious, where's this guy gone? And then we go to the party, tell everyone about it, and then we're traveling back and we come across the cart about 2 Ks down from the party. It's clearly just broken because of something happened to it. It
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
crashed.
yeah,
And
yeah.
obviously got out, and we like sussed out if he was in there, and the guy wasn't there. But we pushed the car into the ocean. It was like on the edge of the
Shut up.
yeah.
So you've blown your cover
Yeah,
now.
it fell probably, that's 12 stories. It was probably 3 stories down to the rocks in the ocean below.
Chuck a bit of GST on it. Six stories.
This is 12.
Oh yeah, but you.
Oh my,
Yeah.
it was a lot. Like, my mate, his four-wheel drive, bought, like, pushed into the side of the Commodore. It was a white Commodore, pushed into the side of it, and then it just went down. And as it was like just tumbling to the down to the ocean, I was just like,
He better not be in
this
the boat.
is, yeah, is he definitely not in there? Yeah, we were just always like sworn to secrecy.
Yeah, right, but you had to put it in your show.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that was probably the stu yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
pretty
that was
wild.
That was pretty silly. And I remember, like, that was around when I was, had a, was dabbling in smoking.
I see you're a
bit
stoner.
Of weed.
You're a stoner.
And how paranoid you get doing something like that and then going and having a
couple of coins or
so, yeah, worst idea, the worst combo. But yeah, we never heard from that guy or
saw him ever again.
Yeah. 23 years later, yeah.
What would you do if you popped up now?
Well,
the first thing is the arm.
Yeah. I'd sue you for that, so shut up.
Retribution.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know if the car's still there, though. Because how long was the car there
well,
for? After.
We had.
Did you ever notice?
No, we were then, like about a week after, another mate who we told the story to keep quiet, he said, that car is on a front lawn. It had been like towed, out, like picked up out of the ocean.
Yeah, right.
And was just in like a pancake on the front lawn of a house just down from.
Wow.
The,
so
it must have been there.
Ah, okay.
Property.
It'd be funny if the car was still there.
Yeah.
In the ocean.
Yeah.
Be like the HMAS. Yeah. Stick a flag in it.
Folklore.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yoy. So where to now? What's on for the next 12 months? Are you back to Edinburgh at all? Or?
I'd love to. Edinburgh's probably on the back burner just for a little bit. I'd like to get over there, you know, I've got like visions. It is expensive. It's a big outlay.
Okay.
It's
what are you, is there, what's the so return you, for it in terms
not,
of?
Not
not like a whole
it
lot.
It probably costs 20 grand to go for the month.
Okay.
With return flights and the whole family.
Accommodation.
Yeah.
Accommodation's
food. Gone up. Food, yeah. It was probably about 12 when we went the first 2 times. So it's gone up a bit. So, you could probably at best make that back. Like at best.
Okay.
Which is not an amazing, you know, for 6 weeks away, 5 weeks away.
But what does that do for profile? Does it allow you to get into that scene over there?
Yeah, I guess.
Because like, their scenes, yeah, fucking funny.
Yeah, I would love to be able to get into the London, but I'd need to go with a real plan. Like you need to have it really set and know that I've got some things lined up.
Yeah, definitely.
Bookers or,
not just winging it.
Yeah, I need to know people in the know are coming to watch me with the idea that they might
book
put
you.
Me on there. Show like at the Apollo or something.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
That, you know?
Yeah.
So it's definitely something I want to do. I definitely have, and definitely more UK than the States. Although I wouldn't say no if somebody wanted to take.
Is your comedy more UK? It's dry, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is throwback to more a UK style, but I still get a lot of Facebook people in the US, like
yeah,
say,
right.
come to it in the US. To
okay.
US, so I'd still.
The mothership is calling.
Yeah. And I'd be open to that. Again, if I had things lined up there that was something to look forward to. I wouldn't just go the same wing it. I just can't.
Well, those Sushi Mango boys killed it.
Oh,
unbelievable. Fucking hell.
Yeah, so they're huge, yeah.
That was insane.
All created by themselves. Yeah, I love those sort of stories where people are creating it themselves and then blowing up and doing, I think they did Rod Laver, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's
two or three, I think, shows.
That sort of stuff. Yeah,
insane.
I love it.
Insane.
Yeah, all that. So it's basically here, you just do, it's festival season from sort of January to June, and then you just tour your own. I'll just tour my own show at the back half of this year, and just kind of see where that takes me. Try and get as much TV stuff. Just keep boosting the profile. It's and putting clips up. It's just kind of like a never ending.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it's just keep going. So can't I get someone else? Fucking do
this? Yeah. I do enjoy writing a new show each year. Like that's something I really love. So I haven't lost the interest in that yet. So I'll probably keep doing that. A few extra little TV, maybe like Have You Been Paying Attention?
Okay.
Those sort of shows definitely help your profile, which would be great.
Have you been on that before?
No. Been close.
Is that Gleason? That's Gleason, yeah?
That one is Working Dog.
Working Dog.
Yeah, it's the Channel 10 one. So there's very few chances now for stand-ups to get on telly. So you've got to kind of grab your opportunity to get it.
Because there's no real late night TV shows.
No, there's not really any. The gala, like that's one. There's not many things to do stand-up on. Like Hey Hey used to be on, obviously, and The Footy Show used to have stand-up. None of that has it anymore.
Too controversial.
Yeah, but the main thing you just got to do is just keep in the game. I'm sure it's the same with
your industry. Definitely.
You just got to keep, just working hard. And I've always had that thing of I'm just going to head down, bum up, and whatever happens,
happens. Activity breeds activity.
Just keep working.
Would you get into writing for TV or?
I don't know. It would have to be like I've definitely got pitch ideas that I've pitched to TV, like that I want to create my own stuff, and I think I'd just put all my effort into that. I think
it's either one or the other, not sort of.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, and I just have to keep because I say the stand up is what's making my money. And paying the bill, so I need to just keep working on that for myself.
Okay.
It would have to be a pretty good deal to stop that and work on something else. And I wouldn't mind doing a little bit of like acting here and there, just in like parts that are, I can't act per se. Like I've never done any training, but if it's like written to someone that's a Aussie, you know, laid back guy, I'd gladly do the part.
Yeah.
Because that also just builds your profile.
Yeah, definitely.
So I've just got all these little things I want to do.
I'm writing a couple of things.
Yeah?
We could, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Have a tamper with
you. Yeah. The one about getting the cane.
There's a skit show in it somewhere. Aussies used to be, love that. Yeah. I don't understand why there's nothing. Yeah. There's nothing at the moment.
Yeah, there's been a few little tries of sketch things on Aussie TV. They're just not popping at the moment. I think because TV is obviously, people just want reality on TV at the moment. Those reality farmer wants a wife shows and that. That's just
Married at First Sight.
Yeah.
I tuned in for about 2.5 seconds yesterday.
I think that's just what people watch TV.
Really?
Want. And then you've got so many options now with all the services.
Stan's and Netflix.
You're on your phone as well while you're watching these things.
I'm watching this.
Yeah.
Watching the wife cook.
Yeah. I think online is where it's at. And just
isn't it? YouTube, the shorts.
YouTube, yeah. I'd like to film another special. I did a couple 2 years ago. So I'd like to film something else for maybe try and pitch it to Netflix Australia or something, you know?
All those big dogs.
Yeah. But it's just, it's funny. Like, I'm sure it's the same with you. You just don't know what's coming up.
At all.
I know that I'm doing the festival. And I know that I'll probably do the festival next year, but something could come up in that back half of the year. I might get an offer to go somewhere, or you just don't.
Someone might see something and off you go, you're set for 3 months.
Yeah, and initially when you get into it and you go full time, it's a little bit stressful not knowing what's coming, but you just get used to it. You just get used to having quiet times and, you say, busy times, but if you're active and making things happen, then you're fine. That's kind of my next 12 months. I think it'll just be same with maybe some more TV and getting out there a bit more.
Yeah, nice.
Boosting the following. Obviously doing things like this and touching, boosting my profile via your podcast.
Thank you. And thank you for coming on.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me up here at the Scary.
Yeah, it's a beautiful view. It makes it even funnier that
I've been terrified that. You were laughing at me when I chained myself to this chair. But yeah.
Unlock him quick, guys. Well, thank you. Thanks, pleasure.
Thank you.
And